Looking for something exciting to read? How Does He, A Man About a Dog combines darkly comic short stories, powerful poems, and pulp fiction prose to create a heartbreaking and hilarious journey that readers will not soon forget. Read How Does He, A Man About a Dog collected writings for free with Kindle Unlimited. The ebook is available on Kindle and print copies are available on Amazon, The Book Depository, and more. Also, please check out the show notes. The following is a Super Network production with Super Marcy.
If I could have given them that money, I would have gladly taken my cameo in The Fanatic.
The terrible Australian B. Jermaine.
See, that's a version of this scene I want to see. Instead of Casey Jones, it's just Jason Voorhees.
It contains coarse language.
This movie has had two different women having two different tongues up their
mature themes.
Like, I could also imagine, like, some people at this party could also be members of the cult.
Potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. Please find us at supermarcy.com and subscribe to us via Patreon at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Enjoy.
G'day everyone, this is B. Jermaine, aka The Terrible Aussie, and welcome to episode 158 of the Super Podcast. And with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, the one, the only, Super Marcy. Hello, Marcy, how are you?
Hello, it's good to see you and good to be here once again.
Indeed, even though we podcast together all the time, Marcy, and I sort of realized just before we started recording this episode, this is our first non-audio commentary version of Super Podcast since April.
Yes, it is, because we do the monthly fan-voted commentaries for the Super Podcast, but you know what? We can change it up whenever we like. We're in charge. We're the boss.
Exactly, exactly. So we can do whatever we want with the show, and this is one I'm looking forward to, because this one we decided to do, you know, sort of put together pretty quickly, and we have a pretty good reason why that is. Because we have a very special show.
I asked you to, I was like, I need to be platformed. You know, God.
Exactly, exactly. And of course, if anyone recognized that voice, that's our good friend Mike Delaney. Hello, Mike, how are you?
I'm well, thank you, Beat. How are you guys?
I
know how you guys are. We were just talking. You got out of lockdown. You guys are doing amazing. Yes. You're going to go lick telephone poles and
indeed
touch people's butts.
I was already licking like telephone poles even before all this stuff was happening. So
yeah, you were, to be fair.
Exactly. Yeah. And then I know I was afterwards, I was like licking like the concrete, but you know, that's a whole different story there.
Yeah, but you were just licking the floor of a emergency room department hospital floor.
Exactly. I can't do that now because, you know, COVID, but that's all. But before all this was happening, I was doing it at least 3 times a week.
Yeah, true.
But but besides us, how have things been going with you, Mike? It has been a little while since you've been on the show last, because I remember the last episode you were on was one of our audio commentaries. I believe it was when we did a sort of back-to-back commentaries of both Crash and The Fanatic.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. Yeah, we watched Crash, and we felt nice and awkward, you know, afterwards with all the Elias Koteas and car fucking, you know.
Yeah.
And then, then we had to wash it down with something, you know, that was just like a fun-loving, cuddly time, just a feel-good movie. So we watched The Fanatic. It was great.
Yes, we did.
Exactly. And it was a good, it was a really fun time, and we're looking forward to having you back on the show. Now, this episode will be a little bit different because we have a really cool, awesome topic lined up for today's episode. Since we are still in the Halloween season, or at least in the final days of the season, which I'm very sad about, we have decided for this topic for the show, we're going to be doing a sort of a, like, our sort of, sorry, sort of like our sort of, curating our own little movie marathons that we would like to do if we were having like a sleepover slash slumber party. And the reason why we've kind of came up with this idea for the show is because Mike, you have a new project that's going to be debuting very soon. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Oh, yeah. My partner and I at Splat House Productions, Miss Sarah Quakendall, we came up with this idea during quarantine. And, you know, we would joke about it here and there and, you know, dream about it and stuff. But then in the last few months, you know, bless her, she like pushed it to like make it go forward. You know, we had all this time during quarantine to work on our projects, but we didn't necessarily have audiences, you know, to get them out to. Because, yeah, I mean, TLDR, we made a creature feature, you know, horror host show, you know, in the kind of in the spirit and vein of what we love from our childhood, like Pee Wee, Elvira, you know, big kind of goofy musical theater from our roots in stage work, you know. Yeah, it's called Slumber Party Sleepover, and Sarah and I play alternate versions of ourselves that are the directors of communication for this town that was ravaged by Y2K, and now it's 20 years later. And they have this weekly mandated government program that everyone has to watch in the form of a slumber party. And then we lead the slumber party.
Oh, it sounds intriguing.
Sleepover. Slumber party sleepover.
Yes.
Yeah. And what does the, because I understand that your very first episode is going to debut on YouTube on Halloween. And it will be a weekly show. So for all our listeners out there who are interested in checking out the show, what can our audience like expect from Slumber Party Sleepover? Or Sleepover Slumber Party.
Well, I'm so glad you asked, because I could talk more about some great stuff that Sarah has been doing for the show. One segment we have, you know, because we want to do like a dinner and a movie type thing, but you know, Slumber Party Sleepovers, you don't really have dinner, you know, you have snacks. Mm. And in our post, you know, Y2K apocalyptic town, you know, the snacks we have are canned foods and dried foods. So we do a lot of spooky snacks from what we have from our rations, you know, over the last 21 years. We do, you know, viewer mail segments.
Oh, yeah.
We address directly, you know, our constituents, our citizens in White Creek with things that are happening in the town. Because there's, you know, this is the mandated slumber party sleepover, so they have to be there, so they have to hear this information, and so do you.
Awesome. And also, like, you'll also be showing films as well, from what I from what you were telling me before.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we host, you know, part of the communal experience of a slumber party or a sleepover, or a slumber party sleepover, is, you know, having a movie to come together to for, you know, a various reason or theme or whatnot. So, yeah, we, as directors of communication, we select our films very specifically for each episode.
So awesome, everything in the public domain?
You know, we just happen to be doing a public domain run right now. So, yes, Marcy.
But to be fair,
no, actually, that's not true. No, that is not true, because, and I believe it's the third episode, but we do have a licensed film,
and we
partnered with someone for that. So
awesome. Very exciting. I was only giving
But you know what? Legit talk, like real talk. You guys go into the public domain. I know it's different in each country, but in Australia, like, see what you guys have in the public domain, because there is some, like, treasures in there.
Oh, don't worry. We have discovered this because of doing our Ozploit cast, where watching every single Ozploitation film from the very beginning. So I think that was, like, 1970.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we found a lot that was sort of... publicly available to watch. Let me tell you, it's very weird, and some of them are on the porno sites, just saying.
I'd imagine the exploitation, definitely on the porno side. That's like 42nd Street and hillbilly exploitation and like black exploitation. It's everything rolled into one. It's exploitation. It's nuts,
indeed.
And in the 70s, that was sex obsessed. So, and we're suffering for it right now.
Exactly, exactly. But for the what movie have you and Sarah got lined up for the very first episode? And I think from what I've heard, the
first episode.
Wait, yeah, I was going to say, like, what you've picked out is a very good choice.
No, first episode is Halloween themed because, you'll see. Well, for one thing, it comes out on Halloween, so duh. There's that reason. But then, I guess narratively, there's a reason as well. But, it's Herc Harvey's Carnival of Souls.
Nice.
Yeah, no, that's a great one.
Oh, it is a great movie, and I look forward to sort of seeing it, how it sort of weaved into the show. Like, will you be showing the whole thing or some parts of it, or will it be kind of, you know, like, because I'm
that one's unedited, so yeah, the whole thing. Yeah, that'll be the theatrical version.
Nice.
Very exciting. And where can people find all the information to check it out on Halloween?
Well, Dr. Quakendahl has made an amazing website at splathouse.com. And then we also have the YouTube channel page, which is Splathouse Productions.
Nice.
And that's, you know, directly to subscribe.
And
yep,
you know, like, smash like and subscribe.
Yes.
And leave a comment below. Turkey bacon or bacon? Next week. No, it's not that type of YouTube show. No, this is in the vein of like Wayne's World, Public Access, you know, Tim and Eric, WNUF, the good stuff.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to checking out the first episode once it drops.
And we'll have links in the show notes, in the show description. So be sure to check that out too, listeners.
Yeah, thank you.
Exactly.
Let's talk movies. Let's talk other people's movies now.
Indeed. Yeah. Like, since we are talking about slumber parties, and I think all three of us at some point had, when we were growing up, when we were kids and all that, would have had, like, a sleepover or slumber party with a few friends and all that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like a lot of things you'd want to do, you want to do some things that are fun. And, of course, one of those being watching a movie or two. So, especially of the horror variety. So the three of us, we've curated our own little lists. Mm-hmm. So if we were throwing our own little slumber parties, what films would we like to show our friends at these slumber parties? Mm. And Marcy, what would be the very first film you would show at your slumber party?
Well, look, I just wanted to actually, before I got into mine, I just wanted to ask, what's probably, I don't want to say the worst, but maybe the most maybe inappropriate or really messed up movie that you have watched at a sleepover?
Oh.
Because mine's very easy.
I don't know about mine, because mine were kind of, I guess, very basic by comparison. I think the last time I had a sleepover event, like when I was like in my early teens with a few mates, we just ended up like watching, you know, Friday the 13th, Part 7, The New Blood, The Amityville Horror, and that was kind of really sort of mainly it. So nothing really too weird or outlandish in any way, but I'm kind of curious of what you've got, Marcy. But Mike, has any movie like that actually happened to you?
No, but you know what we'd try to fuck with when we'd go to my one friend Walter Hill's house? His name was really Walter Hill, and his mom was also Beverly. So that was weird, because there was like Walter Hill, the director, and then Beverly Hills, the place, I guess. But they were, anyway, that was their name. I don't know if, I probably shouldn't name check people, but they had unique names. I don't know. But no, when we would go to his house, what we'd try to fuck with is watching like the Red Shoe Diaries or you know, something like that on Showtime, something salacious where you could see a little, you know, boob or something. But most of the time, like when we would pick movies and stuff, it was pretty vanilla, you know, because you'd have to have rented money or something and got it on your own. But I think the last one we did was RoboCop 3, if I remember correctly. And that was like right when it came out, you know. And man, we are disappointed. Oh no, I remember one time with my friend Mike, we watched right when it came out, we watched Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Oh.
And then there's that the big like lesbian vampire scene, you know, and that was a little like, ooh, I'm watching this with my buddy, you know.
That's just like one of the most salacious scenes in that whole movie. Because let's not forget, there's a scene where basically, I believe, Dracula in werewolf form basically goes down on Sadie Frost. Which is an image I'm still trying to get out of my head, but I digress.
Wow.
But Marcy, what movie did you have that was so scandalous at your
Dracula walked so Twilight could run.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, well, it could be classified as a horror movie, but it's not. But yeah, I was 10, and I think it was a cousin's sleepover, and we rented Kids, and it just come out.
Oh no!
Oh yeah, no. Kids is a horror movie. It are is. You kidding?
It is.
And then even the true story, like the post production story of that movie, is a horror story, and Harmony Korine's a horror story.
The whole thing.
But god damn it, I was into Gummo, so I totally get what you're doing.
Yeah, so anyway, yeah, I was 10, I saw that movie, and then I did not really recover ever. You know, it's a bit too much.
I don't think anyone that age would recover after watching Kids that young.
That explain a lot that I can pretty much watch anything these days.
Like, it's probably a good thing I only watched that movie until, like, my late 20s, I think. So, but even then, I was horrified, but...
Yeah. But anyway, my first movie for my overnight slumber party sleepover movie horror marathon, I've gone with my favourite horror movie of all time, which is Reanimator. Because, you know what, this movie has everything you need. It's funny, it's gory, it's ridiculous, it has some zombies, it has Jeffrey Combs, it has Barbara Crampton in nothing, so you see boobies. It has, you know, decapitated heads that, you know, do head. It's kind of weird. It's a bizarre movie, but it's brilliant, it's amazing, it's beautiful.
Yeah, that scene with the head in the pan, you know?
Yeah. You
bastard!
You bastard!
Oh, jeez.
That one's so good.
It is a great movie.
I think it's a really fun, ridiculous movie to kick off the proceedings.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's one of those movies that is just kind of a good kind of mixture of a party horror film for something. For any type of event. Now, Mike, what would be the very first film you would show at your slumber party?
Well, we had a bit of a technical difficulty, but I did want to ask or talk a little bit about Reanimator for a second, if that's cool.
Yes, cool. Please do, because yes, you didn't get to.
I think I saw the other day on the website you guys did Beyond Reanimator.
Yes, we did.
Yes.
Did you watch the Reanimate Your Feet music video?
No.
All right. Is there any way you could pull this up right now? Like, you could do a live react?
Sure. That'd be,
I think we probably can.
Yeah, sure. Let me go into...
Because it's one of the greatest Halloween party themes of all time. And, you know, very few people... I mean, outside of the Beyond Reanimator cult.
Okay,
no.
What's it called?
It's called Reanimate Your Feet. It's like the official song from Beyond Reanimator.
Your Feet. All right, I'm looking it up right now.
They didn't put it in the movie proper, but I had thought they put it over the credits, but I don't know if you stayed for that, but... I couldn't see Brian Usna letting it be in the movie. I don't remember it being in the movie.
I think I found the song.
Mm-hmm.
Give me 1 second. I will pull up the screen.
Yes.
And we're going to listen to it.
And we'll put a bit of audio so people can...
Come a little closer. I'm the reanimator.
Wow. Wow, this is quintessentially early 2000s.
I'm scared, actually. Is this it?
I swear to God.
What the hell? Am I watching?
Yeah, this is like... This is probably more terrifying than the old reanimator.
Well, yeah, that, you know, I was saying, if you want to kind of set the mood, you know, you're showing the classic good reanimator, you know, the Stuart Gordon one. But yeah, I would open your party with a little reanimate your feet. See if you can get some dancing going, you know?
Yeah, it's not the worst idea in the world. I'm not going to listen to the whole thing, obviously.
Oh, I wouldn't recommend it. No, I wouldn't recommend that.
I might have to put that as the song for the end of this episode. But
yeah, so there we go. Reanimate your feet, folks.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So for my first pick, so the way I'm... The way I'm tackling this list is like, you know, it's something happening now, right? Like I'm finally able to get a bunch of my good friends together to have an all night movie marathon, and I don't know, I'm kind of thinking of their interests, and if I had, because you don't have a lot of time as an adult to sit around and watch movies with your friends, you know, unless you're, anyway, no, I won't go there, but. But that's to say, I would want to pick movies for like a certain group of people. So this is for a certain audience. But the first thing I would want to show them, you know, to kind of unlock the spirit of the night and maybe the spirit of the curator. The first thing I'd want to show them would be something kind of fun, family friendly, horror themed, but also, you know, intellectual. Grows your dendrites. It's a documentary, American movie from 1999. I think that would be the first movie of what will turn out to be a horror movie marathon. But I think that I like that as a stage setter, you know, for what we'll pick.
Nice. And that is a good documentary too. I saw it maybe over 10 years ago.
It's been ages. I don't remember much of it because it's been so long.
And it's a pretty inspiring film as well, because it's basically, you know, about a group of friends who come together to make a horror film.
Mm.
Right. Yeah. And I mean that in... B just said it out loud, but that is going to be the theme for the rest of my list. But I think it'd be cool to, yeah, frame that evening with like the story of Mark and Mike and their movie Coven. Or Coven, excuse me. Coven sounds like oven. Yeah, Coven.
Coven.
Coven sounds like oven. That's right.
Oven. Well, I should have added my... sort of movie marathon is zombie related, so yeah.
Okay, cool.
I think I forgot to add.
Yeah, you had a theme as well.
Yes,
nice.
Yes, and mainly because I guess you know, recently I watched, yeah, I'm behind on my 31 Days of Horror, whatever, I'm catching up. What's it called? The Night Eats the World, which was unlike any zombie film I had seen. And I'm also playing a lot of Xbox, and I've been playing The Walking Dead game, so there's also zombies, so they've been a bit on my mind. So I thought, yeah, okay, reanimate a zombie thing, let's go. Anyway, Bede, yes. Off to you for your number, or your first
or
movie.
You, Bede.
Yes. Well, speaking of zombies, that's actually happens to be my first pick. However, though, it's kind of a mishmash of a lot of things, and zombies are a part of it. And it's actually a movie I recently watched as part of my 31 Days of Horror, and that is the 1985 Mexican horror film Cemetery of Terror, which is a mishmash of so many subgenres, because it's a movie that's set on Halloween night, and it's about a group of friends who go to this abandoned house that's near a cemetery. And during the night, a lot of crazy shit happens, because there's also like an undead serial killer. There's also a devil worshipping cult. There's zombies, and it is also a film that switches gears as well. And, you know, it has a lot of the supernatural elements as well. And the thing is, though, like, it feel like it is a mixture of so many different things, and you don't think it would all work together well, but surprisingly it does, and it ends up just being a really fun time from beginning to end. Just, I would say, like, imagine the zombie sequence from the Thriller music video expanded into a whole feature-length film, and this is basically what this film is. And it's just a lot of fun, and I just had an absolute blast. Like, it is very cheesy and very silly, but it is just a total blast from start to finish.
I haven't seen it, but maybe I need to.
Indeed.
Hell yeah.
And
where is that on physical media?
Well, I believe our good friends over at Vinegar Syndrome released this movie.
You don't say, Bede.
Exactly. We got a nice little plug there. So, but I would say this was a blind buy for me. I didn't know what to expect to sit when I sat down to watch it, but I absolutely loved it. So this is, if anyone is like in the upcoming Black Friday Vinegar Syndrome sale, wants to buy something, definitely pick up Cemetery of Terror, because it's worth getting for sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, they've been having just a hell of a year generally. I think that was one of their later batches last year, but yeah, great recommendation, dude.
Yes.
Good plug.
I need to check out the other director's films, because I hear they get more and more insane as they go along.
Yeah, that's a Brad Henderson favorite there.
Yes. Marcy, what would be your second pick for your slumber party?
Mine would be Burial Ground. No, not really. I just wanted to mention that movie. Mama! Look, if I was having a movie marathon, a horror movie marathon, that had boys who wanted to be sexual with their mothers, then Burial Ground would be number one. Sleepwalkers would be number two. Or maybe we'd end on Sleepwalkers, but for some reason, this fucking topic, this thing, just keeps coming up in the movies I'm watching. But anyway,
and don't forget Blood Rage, Marcy.
Yes, there is that too. Lord. Anyway, no, my real pick is because I'm going with more like a fun zombie-related theme, and one I actually think is a lot of fun, and it's one I saw. I was probably way too young to see it, but it's definitely one of my core, like, early horror memories, and I think it would be a lot of fun. As Return of the Living Dead, Part 3.
Indeed. So we're going to skip the first two and go straight to the third part, which is kind of...
Oh, see, there you go. Connective tissue, because the third one's Brian Yuzna again.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
But, yeah, you don't really need to see the others to see this one. It's kind of, you know...
Oh, no.
It's self-explanatory, but it's probably perhaps best known for Melinda Clark and her transformation. And she's still the hottest thing that you could see in horror, because,
Well, she's definitely, without a doubt, the sexiest zombie ever put on film.
Mm. Yeah, no complaints. She can have all that metal in her, and I'd still be like, yeah, let's go. Let's do it. Let's get on.
That's it. Yeah, that's a like low-key good love story, you know, that movie. That's a good one.
Oh, yeah. And I remember seeing that, at, like, when I started getting into horror as a teenager, that was, like, one of the first horror films I saw. I didn't see the first Return of the Living Dead till later, but I saw the second one first, which was delightfully silly and over the top. But then I thought, I expected the third film to be exactly the same, but then I watched it and I'm like, this is way more darker and serious than I thought it was
going to be. And if you're of a certain age and you're into women, man, you saw that poster when that came out for Return of the Living Dead. And that was, man, that was like... It just drew everyone to that box.
Yeah.
And it was such a striking image for that.
I do think this was actually one that we did watch on a sleepover as well at one point. And I do remember it being one of the ones that really grossed me out in those early years. Because it is quite gruesome, but I actually find it's such a fun movie. It just in its own right. It's just a good time. And I think it actually goes really well with Reanimator, to be fair.
Yeah, he was doing, Yuzna was making sure there was a lot of good goopy work in his movie at that time. He was doing, yeah, like Society and his Silent Night, Deadly Night movie, and he had all those. Was that Screaming Mad George? Yeah, Screaming Mad George worked on those with him. That's a good pick.
And what would be your second pick, Mike?
You know, this could have gone a few different ways, but I'm going to really nail the theme in, and that theme is friends getting together to make a movie. You know, that's what Mark was trying to do with his Friends in American movie, and that was kind of the spirit I wanted to keep going with. So the first one, you know, of the narratives that I'd pick like that would also be a tale from the Midwest, and that would be Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell's Evil Dead.
Yes.
Just straight up the OG legend, but not look at it or not appreciate it from, you know, its iconography and horror, but appreciate it from the point of view of, like, childhood friends that fucking dreamed about that and finally got to get the resources together and then go live their, you know, Hollywood film dreams.
Yeah, it really, when you, after, like, rewatching that, after reading Bruce Campbell's book, it really puts it into perspective, and it's such a different experience, and it is, you can view it on that level completely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and it, pretty much that film kind of really, like, it's very rare for a director's signature style to kind of shine through on their debut film. Usually it takes a couple films to kind of develop and go in that style, but Sam Raimi kind of just went straight out of the gate. Like, that movie, like, in terms of his visual style, in terms of how he shoots certain scenes or the sort of camera angles and just the way how he sort of stages scares and, you know, and also just the sort of the tone of mixing horror and comedy is all prevalent in that very first film. And, you know, the fact that he was in his very early 20s at the time when he made that film, it's like, sure. Film was like, even though they had a very low budget, but they made the most of that low budget and created something that was so creative and so unique for a debut film.
And again, I mean, because of the personal relationships and friendships, I mean, it's because of that movie we get a healthy career from the Coen brothers too, you know, with them working on the picture.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and then we get this great playful banter that begins between Sam Raimi and Wes Craven in their films together. And the movie's legendary for, Ash and the Deadites and stuff. But no, the story about those friends getting to make that's what I fucking love.
Oh, yeah, it's very inspiring, too. And the way how that film just turned out in the end was just phenomenal. And it also has to say something too, when basically when your film comes out, it caused such a stir that in some places in the world it's banned as well.
Right.
It also gets on the UK's video nasty list as well.
Yeah. It's also so good you have to remake half of it when you make the sequel.
Exactly.
They're like, just give us half of that fucking great movie again.
Let's do the half of the first film again, but turn it up to 11.
Yeah, exactly. And then Raimi and Campbell would be like, no, this one goes to 12.
Exactly.
They'd fucking put Christopher Guest back in his seat.
Exactly. Or just put it even up even more so to 13. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they go full Marty DeBerge and just, like, logic the shit out of that. They're like, why don't you just make it 49? Yeah.
Exactly. I guess for my next pick, you know, when I think of horror, one of my favorite actors from the genre of all time is Vincent Price. I love Vincent Price, and every time I see a movie of his, he's an actor who, no matter the quality of the film he's in, he always gives it 110%. Like, he's just so magnetic when he's on screen. And one film of his that I know where he kind of shows that even more so, because he gets to basically play an actor in the film, and I'm talking about the film Theater of Blood, which he plays an actor who is, you know, who is best known to playing Shakespeare. But then he decides to take revenge on his critics for criticizing all of his work because they feel he's pretty much just tired and old and just not with it anymore.
So satisfying. See, Vincent Price went after the trolls, you know. Long before the internet existed.
I'm Vincent Price. I can't do it.
I'm Vincent Price's egg magic. Hello, Jody. I'm going back to rest in the crypt. I guess that was probably the worst Vincent Price impression ever, but
it's a pretty good James Mason, though. It's a pretty good James Mason.
I've heard people say it either sounds like James Mason or Alan Rickman.
It's Alan
like
one Rickman pretending to be Vincent Price.
Yeah, it is kind of Rickman-y. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Theater of Blood
is hollow. Yeah.
But Theater of Blood is a lot of fun. Like, it is, you know, basically Vincent Price just hamming it up to about 12 and just doing it in such a brilliant way. And of course, Diana Rigg's in it as well, a very young Diana Rigg, who recently passed away. And it's just a really fun movie. And, you know, there's a lot of interesting things about it because it does have a bit of a sort of precursor to, you know, like, other, like, you know, it kind of sort of foreshadows like where the genre will go into the future. And the fact that it is also a bit of a satire on the theater world and is also a lot of fun. And, you know, it's just, it's really is worth checking out just for Vincent Price alone. Like, he's just great. But the film itself is also just a lot of fun as well. And it definitely lives up to its title of being a theater of blood because there's a lot of blood gushing throughout this whole film.
Yeah, one fun thing about Vincent Price was, you know, he got to experience like almost every type of career you could have in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. I mean, or level of celebrity, I should say, because, you know, he was like the handsome, you know, supporting character. And, you know, I'm thinking of like Laura or something where he's like a regal actor and known for his good looks and his poise and da da da. And then, you know, then he got to kind of get rediscovered when Roger Corman, you know, got him back in the pictures, and he never really seemed to take it as like a dig, you know. He never seemed to be sad to be there, like Lon Chaney Jr. sometimes, or like John Carradine or something. He always had fun in those movies, or at least appeared to be.
Yeah,
he got to be like a meme, you know, towards the end of his life when he just got to do like his cool appearances on like the aforementioned Thriller and stuff, and he got to just go on all the late shows. He was a cool dude.
Oh yeah, like you could definitely tell, like, you know, compared to, you know, some horror actors kind of get, you know, kind of forced into that kind of role, and you can tell whether they are kind of almost like they don't really sort of care about it. But I always got the impression, especially with Vincent Price, like he genuinely loved working in the horror genre. Like, he, like, sort of found his niche, and he just sort of milked it for all his worth. And, you know, he was still doing that right up until his death. And, like, you could definitely tell, like, there was never a resentment of him becoming a quote-unquote horror actor. He just genuinely loved doing the genre and just doing any film that pretty much came his way.
Yes.
Hell yeah, he even did a cool episode of the Brady Bunch when they went to Hawaii.
I did not know that, and I used to watch the Brady Bunch as a kid.
It was a two-part episode. It was the one with the tiki idol that...
I remember that, but I don't remember Vincent Price in it.
Oh, yeah. No, go back. YouTube it. Yeah.
I'll have to, for sure.
They also used a part of that storyline for the second movie. But they, you know, obviously Vincent Price was passed by then, but
yeah,
so, that was from the TV show.
Yeah, I know. I'll have to go check that episode out because now that I know Vincent Price is in those two episodes, I'm like excited to rewatch it. But Marcy, what would be your third film for your slumber party?
All right. So keeping in with the fun-ish zombie movies, I have picked Shaun of the Dead. And, you know, watching this film now, it just feels very sort of pandemic relevant. It's ridiculous. Indeed. It really is. And it just kind of represents, like, we would, you know, we just have to sit idly by and wait for this to all blow over. And what happens when you don't? Yeah. But look, it's a really fun film. It was kind of everywhere at a time, and I think people kind of got a bit, I don't know, over that sort of what it had sort of become and how much it was influencing. But like, it's still such a great and fun, you know, zombie comedy horror film. I think it still really, really works. And again, looking at it now from, you know, going through a pandemic kind of eyes and being in lockdown, it really does kind of play differently. And I just think it's such a good time that I think it's the perfect kind of middle breather film for my little marathon.
Definitely. And I mean, it's a great film. It's really hilarious. There's a lot of great quotes that everyone still to this day quotes endlessly. And, you
You've
know, there's
got
some
red on you, Bede.
Exactly. and also it's a movie that, you know, does have a lot of heart to it as well. And especially knows when to get serious as well, especially in the last half of the film where, you know, like when shit actually hits the fan, like the movie, that's when the movie, you know, knows when to be serious. Like, it's a movie that kind of knows when the stakes are important, that and wherever, and the emotions of the story as well.
What it gets so right is that, you know, we as people, we are almost essentially like zombie-like because it's routine every day. You know, even more so today, we're always on our phones. You know, we're so disconnected from the outside world, much like the character of Sean is, that he's going to work, he doesn't even notice there's a zombie apocalypse. And it's just on this level, it is that message and theme is just so there that we're seeing it more and more and more as the years have progressed. It's just, there's just so much with that film. It really is.
Yeah, there really is. And I gotta say, I was super skeptical of that movie when I first saw it was coming out. Because before it came out in the U.S., I think it's even before it came out overseas. I don't know, but Edgar Wright was down at UCLA and he was doing a screening of it. And my buddy gave me a signed poster from Edgar Wright at that event that said, like, one of the zombies, Edgar Wright made him say, like, Mike is so sexy or something like that. And I was like, well, you know, it's kind of like, I don't want to like this movie now because that guy's obviously an idiot because, you know, he doesn't even know me. Like, he's not funny. And then the movie came out and was like a stone cold classic and amazing. And yeah, don't judge a, you know, movie because of a compliment from a director.
Exactly. But Mike, what would be your third pick for your slumber party?
You know, I'm really enjoying kind of this light family theme, you know, but with, you know, of course, Evil Dead has it has strong horror and stuff, but it's also really funny. So I'm going to kind of keep going. I'm going to move a little funnier now because I'm thinking it's around midnight in the festival. If we started at like 8, if we started watching movies at 8, we're a little punchy now. So I like a late night comedy. I would put on Larry Blumeyer's The Lost Skeleton of Cadavra.
Oh my god, yes.
A movie I've been wanting to see forever, but I still haven't.
Oh my god.
I saw that years ago. Oh my god.
It's so goddamn funny. And it was made from the necessity of, like, Larry Blumeyer has all these, you know, very talented actor friends that he's just like, man, we should all just do a movie together. So, you know, they came up with this idea to do kind of a 1950s creature feature, like an Ed Wood type thing. But, you know, they wrote it in kind of a tongue-in-cheek, like, oh, geez, you know, like a send-up of 50s movies. But that's not the joke. Like, there's good, legit jokes in the movie. It's really fucking funny.
Been a long time since I've seen it.
Yeah.
I need to see it. Like, I've known about this movie ever since I think I read about it in Fangoria magazine back in the early 2000s. And I'm like, oh, this sounds like a lot of fun. I should check this out at some point, and I still haven't. But hopefully one day I will.
Yeah, there's even a sequel by now, B.
Yeah, I heard there was a sequel. Yeah, I'll have to check that out and then check out the sequel.
Yeah. All his movies are fun, but this one is just like lightning in a bottle. Like it fires on all cylinders. There's so many quotes from it. Like sometimes when I'm taking a sip of water from a cup, I'll just start saying tip 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 tip. Because the aliens have to say tip to remember how to drink like a human. It's so stupid. Or like it has the joke that like the aliens are this advanced race with like high technology and shit, and then they come to Earth and they don't know what the fuck stairs are. It is so dumb.
That sounds.
And they're like, what do we do? And they're scared to death, like, hugging walls, trying to go upstairs. Just fun, like, physical comedy, and yeah, that's a good one.
It's like my everyday life. How do I drink water?
But I did mention that it's made by, like, it's a very, very teeny tiny movie made by, like, a very core group of people, and, like, they're married and stuff, too, so... It counts. It fits.
Yes. And Mike, you've convinced me to finally check out this movie now, and I'll have to do that very soon.
Oh, and after you do, Bede, there's an old Blatt House where we actually were lucky enough to talk to two of the stars of that movie.
Yeah, I'll have to listen to that episode.
Yeah.
So I'll make sure to do that once I see the movie. I'll report back next time we... do an episode together, I'll let you know what I think of Lost.
Yes, you're going to have to. Skeleton.
Oh, fun. Yeah, oh, it's totally up your alley, man, especially with the comedy that, like, you guys, well, we'll talk about that some other time, but it's totally your type of comedy.
It is.
Now, I guess for my third pick, I get the middle mark. So you need something after, you know, Cemetery of Terror and Fear of Blood. You need something that's going to, like, make sure my audience is still very much invested into this marathon. So why not provide them a film that has the best of two worlds, Hammer Horror and Shaw Brothers martial arts film, by combining the two together for The Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires, which has Peter Cushing starring as... Professor Van Helsing, who he's played many times in previous films for Hammer, where he's recruited by seven brothers and their sister, who are martial artists in China, to go up to save their village from a group of vampires that happen to be led by Dracula.
Makes perfect sense.
Exactly. And of course, being that this is a co-production between, like I said, Hammer Films and the Shaw Brothers... Like, this film kind of is able to capture the best of what both those film studios offer. Like, this has the sort of the horror and the gothic feel of a Hammer film, but it has all the really fun, cool, bloody action of a Shaw Brothers film. So, like, this film is an absolute good time from beginning to end. And I love films that kind of, like I said, like, I guess my theme, most, or at least some of the films I'm doing for my... curating for my list have been films that kind of a mishmash of different tones and styles. And for me, Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires is just a riot from beginning to end. And one that I know that, you know, like a lot of people love Hammer, but this one seems to kind of go by the wayside. Not that many people kind of talk about it as much as other films. And maybe if, like, because I know I think I read a while back that they wanted Christopher Lee to reprise his role as Dracula for this film, but I think he turned it down. But I mean, Peter Cushing was very much down to play Van Helsing again. So maybe if Christopher Lee was in this film as well, it probably would have been, you know, be recognized a lot more. But that being said, though, this is definitely an, I would say, a very underrated gem in the Hammer Horror, like their film in Hammer Horror's filmography, but even like in Shaw Brothers as well, because again, you know, both these studios came together to make this film, and not that many people talk about it, and hence why I put it as the middle film on my list, because it's kind of the one that, at least of the films I've got, along with Cemetery of Terror, like most people would never even heard of.
Yeah, no, that's a good pick. I was just trying to remember, and of course, if there was a machine where I could just look it up, that would be helpful. But I was trying to remember what label put that out.
I think
I'm being facetious. I could just look it up, but
I think it was Scream Factory who released it last. So it is out there to buy on Blu-ray if people are interested.
Yeah, no, that is a cool one, and you know, it's an interesting asterisk in like both their catalogs, Shaw and Hammer. It's a truly a product of its time and of the craze, and
because sort of like you know, martial arts was exploding in cinemas, and of course, you know, Hammer wanted to create wanted to make a film that kind of had martial arts in it as well, so they teamed up with the Shaw Brothers to sort of co-produce this film together. And like for me, this film, like I said, it's just a lot of fun. And to kind of see that these two different styles mesh together in the one film is what makes it such a really cool time.
Yeah, it emboldened RZA enough to make the Man with the Iron Fist.
Exactly. Exactly. But hopefully this movie, me talking about this movie has got you interested in checking it out at some point, Marcy, because I believe you haven't seen it yet.
I don't think I've seen it. I know the name very well, but I'm trying to think. I don't think I've seen it.
Indeed. Well, hopefully you will very soon, like I am with Lost Skeleton. Yes. But, Marcy, what is your fourth pick for the summer?
All right. So, moving right along, we're probably at, 2 a.m. at this point in our marathon. So,
that's what I'm thinking. I'm counting on it being about 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Smoke breaks. You had to go to the bathroom. There's a line. Make more snacks. Yeah.
So, time to continue to have more fun with a more recent film, and one that I actually really enjoyed, with Little Monsters, the zombie movie with the 5-year-old kids and the teacher who have to outwit the freaking zombie outbreak at the school, excursion they have to go.
Is that the one with Lupita Nyong?
Yes.
Lupita Nyong'o, yes.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
Yes, it's a lot of fun. We did
See
it together at the, you know, when we could have a Melbourne Film Festival in person.
Indeed. And it is a lot of fun. Party. Like, it's not a film that... Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that'd be a good way to see it. Yeah, because that looked like a fun one. I liked the marketing I saw on that movie. And, you know, she's always entertaining.
Oh, yeah. And she's great in it. Mm. And, you know, it's a film that, like, even though it doesn't reinvent the wheel, but it knows how to have a lot of fun with its premise. And there's... And it also has a lot of heart in it as well.
Yeah, as goofy and as insane as things get, it does have a lot of heart. And, yeah, I mean, look, I'm not biased because, you know, my sister was the producer on it. It is actually genuinely a really fun and enjoyable zombie film. And the way they use the kids in this film with all the, like, foul language and everything going on, it's just so bloody funny. And what's his name?
Josh Gad,
who we all know as Olaf, the Olaf,
Olaf,
the snowman. Yeah. He's just like the prickiest of pricky kids entertainers, and it's bloody funny. So yeah, that would be my middle pick because it's just I think it's a lot of fun. It's a good one to kind of keep us going through the sessions in lead up to my big finale.
Indeed. And Mike, what is your fourth pick for your slumber party?
Oh, this one's going to be short and sweet because if you've seen it, you know why it's here and why it's important to watch this movie at like 2 a.m. or 1:30. And if you haven't seen it, just go find it. It's easy. It's also part of the Vinegar Syndrome label. I think this is my first Vinegar Syndrome style release. But, dude, Don Doler's Night Beast. We're going to slap the kids, give them cups of coffee, wake them up. We're going to watch a good, like, one of the best, most bonkers regional horror films, also out of the Midwest. Has a little bit of everything, but a really, you know, home-cooked film. Don Doler always worked with small crews, always same people, you know, similar actors every time. It was between this or Alien Factor, but I think go full Night Beast. Just go right into it, folks.
I've not seen it, so I cannot comment on your pick.
Yeah. Well, and I don't want to give you too much to comment on because you should just be watching Night Beast. You should treat yourself.
I mean, I haven't seen it either, and I do look forward to checking it out, but I know what one thing I know this film is famous for is because it has the very first on-screen credit for J.J. Abrams, who did the score for this film.
Oh,
that is true. Oh, that is true. He did the score when he was like 17 years old.
He
did like a synthesizer style score for Don Doler. But that's right, because Vinegar Syndrome actually got an interview with J.J. Abrams too in like modern day. So I think when he was finishing his episode 9 was when he talked with him. But that's right. Thanks for bringing that up, Beat. I forgot about that. That's kind of like the crossover connection there.
Exactly. And also, like, you know, I mean, I'm definitely interested to check out Night Beast, but for those out there who were kind of on the fence, I think the fact that J.J. Abrams himself was involved in with this film, and being this is like his first major film credit, definitely would have a lot of people's eyebrows raising. Like, I need to check this out, especially if he's doing the score, and maybe even pick up the Blu-ray since he's being interviewed about it.
No one should be on the fence about this, and I realize I'm underselling it, but everyone in the movie looks like a fucking 70s porn star. All the guys have like a thin layer, like everyone looks so sweaty and they got those mustaches and everyone looks like they're like one cut away from just like beginning to fuck. And you know, there's like exploding spaceships and monsters that rip people apart and adultery. And dude, it's great.
Well, I'm pretty much sold.
Yeah, I'm sold.
Well, for my fourth pick, like, since this would be about, like, we're sort of thinking what time this would be, so it would be 1:30, 2 o'clock. So after Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires, people start to get a little bit sleepy, so you need something that's going to wake them back up. And I figured for my fourth pick, to go back to a very underrated 90s little horror gem, which happens to be a movie spin-off from a classic horror TV show. So my fourth pick would be Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight.
Ooh.
Which, of course...
Yeah, sorry, like, low-key, one of the great horrors from the studios in the 90s.
Oh, yeah. And also it has an absolutely brilliant performance by Billy Zane, who is just going 140 million percent with his performance as the villain. And you can tell
he's... Jada Pinkett's great. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, everyone's so good in that.
Yeah, but this film has, like, a great cast, like, with, you know, Billy Zane, Jada Pinkett Smith, and also you got...
Bill Sadler.
Yeah, Bill Sadler's in it, and also Thomas Hayden Church, CCH Pounder. Dick Miller is also in this film as well. So, like, this is a film, and, you know, it's directed by Ernest Dickerson. And, you know, this film is just... a ton of fun. And it's the type of horror I like where basically a bunch of characters are holed up in one location and basically they have to fight for survival. And this film is just, like I said, it is very gory. It is it's funny as well. It's very creepy. And also it can be batshit insane at times, particularly when you get into the backstory of like why Billy Zane's demon character is after William Sadler in this film, and the sort of the and the reasons, like why are they against each other, and like what happens to the other characters who kind of get involved with their story. But it's just a ton of fun, and of course, the film begins and ends with the Crypt Keeper from the Tales from the Crypt TV show hosting this film. And it's just a really a lot of fun. I think I saw this film before I even saw a single episode of Tales from the Crypt. But it made me excited to check out the TV show, even though I know, yes, the TV show is very much different from the movie. But even then, though, like it's just a really fun time, and one that I would say, like, for any kind of situation, whether it's a Halloween party or a sleepover, if you're looking just for a fun horror romp that everyone will at the party will enjoy, like, I think Demon Knight is definitely one to put up there as a very, like, at least in the top five for sure.
A lot of fun. I had high hopes for Bordello of Blood, but much like Chris Sarandon, I forgot everything about Bordello of Blood. But what's weird is the planned third movie in the Tales from the Crypt, they actually made a third one and then took out all the Crypt Keeper stuff and just released it as a zombie movie. But I actually like it more than Bordello of Blood. Hmm. And that one is it's called Ritual with Jennifer Grey and Tim Curry is in it. But it's basically a remake of I Walked with a Zombie. But it was the third Tales from the Crypt movie. Look it up. It's bizarre. It's bizarre. Yeah, I think they cut the Crypt Keeper stuff because he did it like Rasta style.
Yeah.
Because it's like Jamaican zombie, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. I know of that movie. I've never seen Ritual, but I know like there are versions of that film that don't have the Crypt Keeper's segments, and there are other versions that do, depending, you know, which is available. But I think the version that's more readily available now, like ones that, you know, there it's a bit more hard to find, are of course the ones with the Crypt Keeper's scenes edited back into the film.
But Demon Knight's the best of those, man. Oh, yeah. That's just a good-ass movie, period.
And, Marcy, did you say you haven't seen Demon Knight yet?
No.
I am shocked and surprised.
I know, it's been on the to-watch list, and I just haven't done it yet.
I think whenever we catch up next,
it's Sam Raimi, Peter Jackson-style horror. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's definitely, if you enjoy, like, you know, film, like, the early horror films made by Peter Jackson and Sam Raimi, this is definitely right up your alley.
I will see it. It's not like I don't want to. Don't worry. Just haven't got there yet.
Yes. But Marcy, what would be your grand finale for the slumber party? And I hope this is a great, great pick.
Well, speaking of Peter Jackson,
ooh,
I kick ass for the Lord. And my final film would be Brain Dead, aka Dead Alive.
Yeah, that's the perfect one to end your marathon on.
Yeah, this is ultimate madness of blood and guts and zombie and hilarity and rat monkeys and everything else.
Hell yeah.
Honestly, this is one of the greatest films ever made. And I say that seriously because it is. It's just so much fun. It's so goofy. It's so enjoyable. It's so disgusting. There is nothing that you could dislike about this film. It even has a love story. It kind of fits in with this, what I mentioned before about the boys and their mums, but this relationship's a bit different. This is a bit more, you know, domineering type mother. And he still loves her for some reason. He gets pissed off when someone pisses on her, on her corpse. So there you go. But then there's even a zombie baby that goes absolutely crazy. And, you know, the story of Lionel and Paquita is just so, just beautiful. It's incredible, this movie. It really
and is. Let's not forget, it has the incredible scene that was added in at the very last minute because it wasn't originally going to, but they had a look. But they finished shooting early, and they still had money left over, so they shot this extra scene, which, of course, was Lionel taking the zombie baby out to the park. Yes. And that whole sequence is amazing.
It is so fucking funny. I've seen this film so many times, and I just piss myself every time. Just the actor, I can't think of his name.
Timothy Blaine.
Yeah, he's just so freaking good with that comedic timing. Like, oh my god, it just goes from outrageous to outrageous. And I'll stop cutting you off.
Oh no! I was gonna say that if there was one thing to dislike about the movie, though, it's that it's notoriously, at least in the U.S., it's notoriously like hard to, you know, show and like see because of stupid ass rights issues. But but also I heard Peter Jackson like took back his old catalog, right? And he's going to be doing like 4K remasters of like Bad Taste and Feebles and Brain Dead.
Yeah, I believe that.
I know to call it Brain Dead, by the way. I know the audience that this goes out to, so You won't hear that other title from me, ma'am.
But yeah, I mean, I know he owns those early films and he owns the rights to them. And I know he's working on 4K remasters because he has confirmed that they are coming. Whenever they're coming and whoever's releasing them, I've heard rumors that they were supposed to have been out in December, but I don't think that's happening now. But yeah, I guess he's been busy with his Beatles documentary that he's been working on, so but hopefully
could you imagine getting that footage? When I saw that trailer and what that footage was, I was like, what the fuck? That movie's gonna be amazing.
Oh yeah. And like he does all the rest, his company does all the restoration work as well. Like, he did that, he's doing that for these films, but also the Beatles doco, and he did it also for his World War One documentary, They Shall Not Grow Old.
Movie was bonkers. Yeah, that was a scary ass movie, to be honest with you. Like seeing that colorized World War One footage and the like disease in the trenches and shit.
Yeah. Terrific. It really is.
Oh yeah. And I look forward to seeing like how this film and Bad Taste and Meet the Feebles are gonna look.
Amazing.
Okay, I mean, I hope they're not sort of restore them too much, because I think we even said this back on our TV Tuesday.
You need that grimy look to it, especially like Meet the Feebles has to be grimy and dirty.
Yeah, right. I'm pretty sure he won't get rid of the grain and all that. Like, it needs to be there for the effectiveness of this film. But Brain of Dead, it's what can I say? It's just an amazing movie, and probably one of the few time horror films I've seen that almost did legit make me feel queasy while I was watching it, because the gore is so, even though it's very cartoonish and over the top, it is very full-on.
It was so gross and stuff, and I was having too much of a good time when I first watched it to even care, and I was still a bit squeamish then.
But that movie is amazing, and if people haven't seen it, if you're able to get your hands on it, check it out for sure.
Yes, and I think that's the best way to end my movie marathon. And then we're going to be so excited that, you know, we're so tired, but we're so excited. We're not going to sleep anyway. So, be all good.
But, Mike, what is your grand finale for your slumber party?
All right. I'm going to say it all again out loud just so I can make sure this all tracks the way I wanted it to. But we started with Chris Smith's and Sarah Price's American Movie, you know, the story about horror filmmaker Mark Borchardt. So that kind of sets the tone, because you see clips of his work and, you know, it's regional, it's friends coming together, da-da-da. Then it goes to Evil Dead, okay? We all know that story. And then from Evil Dead, it went to Larry Blamire's La Skeletina Cadavra, okay? Because that's fun, that's goofy, it's bringing the energy back up. Then we're going to capitalize on that energy and show something bonkers. So we showed Night Beast. And then that also kind of, you know, that's also going to have a similar effect, I think, in the end, as like a comedy would. I think it's really going to get people excited for something super crazy. So then I'm going to follow Marcy's logic and fitting in my own theme. I'm going to show the Polonia Brothers Splatter Farm. Ooh, we're going to go full crazy 1980s shot on video, fucking, you know, fake vomit, fake shit, fake, like, it's got limbs getting ripped out. It's got, oh, it's the grossest fucking shit. And it's the Polonia brother here. Do you know Splatterform?
I think I've heard of it because I remember when you and Brad did the shot on video.
Oh, okay.
I believe you guys might have mentioned it on that show, but I haven't seen it personally. Sure.
No, I haven't seen it.
But the Polonias were these you know, young guys in the 80s and they're, you know, early 20s and maybe the mid 80s, and they got in on the shot on video trend, you know, where they would make feature length movies and then they would get them released regionally you know, in video stores and rented out, and then that kind of became like an industry unto itself. So they became these shot on video filmmakers. But their one of their first films, Splatter Farm, man, it is like, yeah, it's like the white trash version of like Brain Dead, like that type of movie. But it's a total brain melter. No redeeming qualities for humanity. It's funny in the way that it shouldn't be funny. Like, it's probably in my mind, it's a good bookend to American Movie, because it's a lot of the same types of humor and things that like Mark would want to do in his movies with like his friends. You know, they ultimately just wanted to make movies to drink vodka to, you know. And then it kind of has that spirit, and the Polonia brothers scrappy stuff. They're a little bit more vanilla. They're less worldly than Mark, but. Man, that movie, though, is bonkers. Splatter Farm.
Splatter Farm.
Yeah.
I'll have to make sure to check that one out.
Mm. Yeah, or don't. You could probably go your entire life without seeing Splatter Farm. live a perfectly sane, happy life, Bede. Or you see Splatter Farm, and then you have to simp for some new memes. You know what I mean? Like, once you see Splatter Farm, you won't go back.
What there'll be the life before Splatter Farm and then the life after Splatter Farm.
I would say so.
That's what I'm thinking my life is going to be like when I have to watch Phantasm, the Ozploitation movie.
Your life will never be the same.
I could go my whole life without needing to watch Phantasm, but unfortunately we do a podcast where I have to watch it.
Oh, the porny one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the porn one. Vinegar Syndrome recently released.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys done that?
We haven't yet.
It'll be our next Oz.
Oh, I have a copy of it. You want me to come on that show? I'll do that show.
Look, if you want to do the bonus segment where we talk about it with you, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I got the Blu-ray here.
Of course you do. We'll put that as a bonus little episode. The more in-depth version on Phantasm. Because I feel like our guest who we have on that show is probably going to be terrified once that movie... is seen.
It's so funny.
But
and your final film, Bede?
Yes, well,
oh, I mean, yeah,
I guess my pick would be probably the most mainstream of our picks, but I think it's like, you know, again, after Demon Night, like, everyone's having a good time, but, you know, they're still a little bit sleepy, like, they're getting the point, it's like, oh, I'm ready to go to sleep. I mean, I don't want to watch anything boring, I don't want to watch anything slow, I want to watch something that's going to have a lot of fun. So again, like with a theme with most of my films, it's a mishmash of many different things. So why not bring together two of the greatest horror icons from the 80s into one film and watch them both battle it out for absolute horror supremacy? So my final film for my slumber party is, of course, Freddy versus Jason.
That's a good one.
Which is a film that is incredibly silly, it's incredibly dumb, and the human characters have the worst dialogue ever, and some of them even give some of the worst performances ever, but this is the film that knows...
Kelly Rowland is both of those things. She gets the worst dialogue, and she gets... Yeah.
I was going to say...
It's one thing to be a bad actor, but it's another thing to be, like, super homophobic in your one little role.
Yeah, that which definitely does not hold up 18 years later. But, or even, I was even thinking like Monica Keena, but that's a whole different story right there. But, But that being said, though, this is a film that knows exactly what it is, and it knows what the fans want to see. Yeah, you kind of have to go through the human stuff before you get to the big battle towards the end. But even then, though, this film does incorporate a lot of time with us as an audience, with being with Freddy and Jason, and just seeing them cause havoc in Haddonfield. And this is an absolute blast. Like, Ronnie Yu brings a lot of energy and style to this film. And also the gore is a lot of fun. Yeah, some of the visual effects don't really hold up as well 18 years later. But even then, some of them didn't even hold up at all, even when the movie came out.
Who knows?
Exactly. Or even the stoner worm creature thing with Freddy being pretending to be a worm that gets stoned. Stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just a lot of fun, and it's just got a good vibe to it. And it's a movie that kind of respects both franchises. It doesn't sort of... there's a great book out there I read last year that I highly recommend everyone to read. It's called Slash of the Titans, The Road to Freddy versus Jason. Oh, I can't remember who wrote the book, but it's a great book that actually goes into the 10-year development of Freddy vs. Jason and goes through every single script that they all had and shows, like, how different this project would have been, like, if it came out in these specific years. And, like, a lot of these ideas, like, mix from being incredibly ambitious into being incredibly stupid. But the main thing was, though, with a lot of these versions is, like, they kind of tried to sort of find ways to help link these two characters together. Like, there'd be versions where Freddy was actually Jason's dad, or Freddy actually molested Jason, or that Freddy was one of the campers who let Jason die at Camp Crystal Lake. So, you know, they tried so hard to kind of put...
Well, they got to do a little nod to that in the movie that they ultimately released, because they did have Robert Englund in one of those dream sequences play a counselor, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I guess that's kind of a reference to that. But I think what the screenwriters did, and this was a smart thing, I guess compared to the other stories, the story we ended up getting is probably not as ambitious as a lot of those, but it's kind of a more back to basics kind of story. But that's what kind of works. And also, you know, they had ground rules on what they wanted to do approaching both these franchises and mixing them together in one film. And one of the key things they did was not having these two characters linked in any way. And, like, this film was, like, the very first time these characters meet. And for me, that actually what makes the film work overall. Like, is that respect to both franchises, while also, you know, bringing some new qualities to both of them. And just seeing how, you know, Jason operates in Freddy's world and how Freddy operates in Jason's world. And of course, it comes into probably one of the best finales in any horror film in probably the last 20 years, is where Freddy and Jason actually duke it out. And this isn't like some kind of underwhelming fight scene. They really go at it. The blood gushes everywhere and limbs are flying. And for me, all these many reasons, and the fact that, you know, there's so many memorable moments throughout this whole film is one of the main reasons why I think this would be the perfect film to end my slumber party on. Because, I mean, yes, it is dumb and it is very silly and cheesy, but it is a really good time.
It's a fun movie. This actually came out around my birthday at the time. So I went to see it on my birthday, I believe. So it was one of my birthday movies. I was so excited to see this movie. And there goes my microphone.
It came out what? August? I'm going to try to guess. August 18th, 2003?
Well, that's what
Australia.
It came out.
What are you thinking?
In Australia it would have been different, huh?
Yeah, actually, I think in Australia it was released.
It was released in October.
End of October. Yeah.
United States premiere was 13th of August.
13th of August. What did I guess? The 18th.
Yeah, 18th. Yes.
Threes kind of look like eights. I'm just trying to see how my brain works. I try to remember dates of movies, so... All right, I got that one close enough.
Australia was the 23rd of October, and I would have gone to see it on the 29th, which is my birthday. So, it's my birthday movie that year.
Yes.
And, yeah, it's still a lot of fun. Definitely, you know, think it's a really good pick to end your marathon on.
Indeed.
Yeah, that was an event to go see that.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that was a lot of fun. Plus, it put some respect on Lachlan Murnau's name. You know, I love that guy.
We love Lachlan Murnau.
I'm always excited when Lachlan Murnau shows up in a movie or something.
He's our favorite.
Indeed.
He's a favorite on the podcast. Sorry.
Exactly. We do love Lachlan Murnau.
What did we see? We've seen him in a few things recently.
He's been in a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I imagine he's all over Tubi.
Oh, he probably is.
He's probably the president of Tubi.
Well, yes. I think, was he in a Masters of Horror or Fear Itself that we did?
I believe he was in a Fear Itself episode that he was in, I think.
He was in a movie, and I can't think of what it could be now.
Yeah, I'm going to kick myself when I look back on the previous episodes.
I'm going to have to just look him up and work it out. Cause it's gonna
but I wager, Mike, the president of Tubi would definitely be Eric Roberts.
You saw him in Scary Movie because you rewatched that recently.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Eric Roberts is the fucking man.
Damn straight he is. And the fact that like he just put his name in Tubi and like a billion movies show up with Eric Roberts. Like, I spent, 20 minutes scrolling through him on Tubi, and I didn't even get to the end.
Yeah, they give him subcategories. You look up Eric Roberts, and then a bunch of drop-down menus that say, action, drama, comedy.
Exactly.
And then even from in there, you got to select.
I think there was, four Eric Roberts Christmas movies on Tubi.
Yeah. I still haven't worked out what the hell... we had watched.
Well, you're right though, because I did see him recently when I rewatched Scary Movie. So
yeah, I said there was Scary Movie, but we were watching him on something, and it's really annoying me now. I can't think of what it was.
I hope it's not one of those cases where we actually watched it outside of our podcast.
Well, I'm looking through his filmography, and there's a fuckload of things.
Indeed. Have you ever seen Eric Roberts when he was on that Jackson Galaxy show about
cats?
My
god, no, I have not. I did not know this was a thing.
Dude, yeah, so Eric Roberts and his wife were on the show, and they don't make any mention that this is like Academy Award nominee Eric Roberts. They just refer to him as Eric. Cat dad. Eric. It's the weirdest fucking thing. Look it up. Jackson Galaxy, Eric Roberts.
Wow.
Cat from Hell or whatever the name of that show is, you know?
Yeah, I think it's My Cat from Hell because I've seen some episodes. Yeah. A Night of the Roxbury. Duh.
Right. That is right. He was in Night of the Roxbury.
And I used to watch Dead Man on Campus all the time.
And he was also in Dracula 2000 as well.
Anyway, enough about Lachlan Monroe.
But we'll start our own pit spin-off podcast. It's going to be called the Lachlan Moncast or something.
On that note, I think that wraps up our podcast.
Indeed. But,
For sure. It must wrap it up because I was so confused. I was sitting here what the fuck are they talking about? Eric Roberts was in Scary Movie. And then
I was still on the Lachlan Murnau.
And then I was like, oh yeah, we were talking about Lachlan Murnau. It didn't make sense until the end here. And then I was like, you guys meant... Mental health awareness is very important.
That is true.
And the quarantine has done a number on us. So
indeed. Mental health is very important.
Your adult ADHD checked out, listeners.
Exactly. Mental health is very important. And so in these trying times, make sure to take care of yourself.
Yes. And each other.
Exactly.
I'm Jerry Springer. Wait, no, that's not how it goes.
But,
oh my God, it's so funny you said that. I used to think it was so weird as a kid because there was that show Donahue. I don't know if they showed Donahue.
I watched Donahue all the time as a kid.
I love watching Donahue.
Fucking Phil Donahue. And he would end every show with his moral grandstanding, his final word. And then there'd be this dramatic pause. And then he would just say, I'm Phil Donahue. And I remember just being a kid going no shit. The show's called Donahue. And you just fucking told us everything you thought. We know who we turned into. And then it's one last plug for him. He's like, I'm Phil Donahue. No shit.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But that'll be a wrap on this episode of the Super Podcast. Yes. Thank you, Marcy, for always being an awesome co-host.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Mike, for coming back on the podcast and talking about having really awesome slumber parties. And now, having talked about all of our lists, I'm like, you know what? I want to organize a slumber party now so I can get this movie marathon of mine started.
Slumber party sleepover, baby. Oh, one last question. I do have a question because Sarah would be remiss if I, well, so would I, if I didn't ask this because I need to know. What did you, Bede, what did you call it? Did you, when you were a kid, did you call it a slumber party or a sleepover?
Ooh, I do remember this conversation.
Like, what did you default to? Like, if you were just speaking naturally about it, would you have called it a slumber party or a sleepover?
I think
it was a sleepover.
I think it was a sleepover because I don't recall, like, you know, the term slumber party being a thing in Australia. It was more like a sleepover.
Yeah, it was just a sleepover.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did you guys first hear Slumber Party then? Is that an American thing?
I think maybe it was a movie thing or something, or TV. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, not from, I wouldn't have heard about it from the Slumber Party Massacre films. I would have heard it from, you know, films I was growing up on as kids. You know, like movies that, you know, family films where like a group of friends got together and they're like, oh, like have a slumber party in my head. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, you know, movies like that. So I would have heard about slumber parties that way. But I think, yeah, in Australia, we just really pretty much just call them sleepovers.
Yeah, it's a sleepover.
Interesting. Yeah, because here, at least in my experience, it always kind of seemed like the little boys or dudes would call it sleepovers and the little ladies would call it, like, slumber parties, you know? Hmm. So anyway, that's why we call it slumber party sleepover, because we're nothing if not trying to appease everybody, and it's a mandated show, so you have to watch it.
Exactly.
We'll be sure to tune in and watch it.
Damn straight. But Marcy, where can people find us on the internet this week?
They can find us at supermarcy.com, and we are on all your social medias. If you look up the Super Network, we are on the Twitters, the Facebooks, the Facebook groups, the YouTube, the Instagram, the TikTok. I don't even remember if there's any other ones because there's so many of them.
Yeah,
personally.
Oh, shit. We're on TikTok now. I forgot about that. Well, we're on TikTok too.
I'll get soon.
Slumber Party.
So, yeah, Mike, so tell us where people could find you on the internet this week.
Well, here. Oh, actually, here and then... I did a screencast with Brad and Sarah, and then Sarah and I released a Splathouse episode on Sunday. Oh, man, I am whoring out this week.
But you better whore yourself, Dave, because we need our audience needs to know where they can listen to and watch all your stuff.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure they do. TikTok is weird, man. That algorithm is spooky. Mm-hmm. They should fucking shut that down.
Yeah, I got sent like an algorithm. Like, it's like it has like people who you follow and like what's trending. And like, legit, the first thing that popped up on my TikTok the other day was like an anti-lockdown thing. I'm like, no, I don't want any of this. Fuck off. I didn't ask for any of this. I didn't go into any algorithms that go in that explored this topic. No.
But dude, my algorithm sends me the right kind of cringy stuff, you know? Like, like, it knows me too well. And then every now and again, it'll throw in something, like, into a hyper-specific, like, interest of mine, like an 8-bit video game or something. And I'm like, oh, my God, how did it know to get that video here? Anyway.
But, yes, you're on TikTok. And where else can people find you, Mike?
Oh, that's it. I don't want them to find me anywhere else. Just on YouTube and TikTok and various podcasts. I don't think I'm ready yet to come back to social media completely.
Yeah, I don't blame you, to be honest. And of course, people can find me still at twitter.com/supermarcy and letterboxed at super_Marcy.
Indeed. And if people want to find me personally, they can find me at my Twitter page at twitter.com/BeeJamine or my personal writer's page on Facebook at facebook.com/TerribleAussie. And, of course, you can find all my work over at supermarcy.com with my reviews and columns. And, of course, being that this is the last few days of the Halloween season, go over to Twitter and look up all my my thoughts and opinions on all the films I've been watching from my 31 Days of Horror film list this year. So,
Hell yeah. What'd you watch today?
I watched, at least at the time of this recording, I finished watching A Bay of Blood, the Mario Bava film.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah, speaking of Friday the 13th, right? Mm. That's kind of a proto slasher there.
Oh, yeah. Like, this movie is, if people haven't seen A Bay of Blood, it basically was like the Friday the 13th before Friday the 13th, because a lot of hallmarks from that franchise are in this film, and particularly a very famous death from the second film was much lifted. So
that's the one with the ending with the kids, right?
Yes, but I don't want to spoil like what happened.
Did I say too much?
Well, we don't know what happens to the kids. So
I don't know what happens. All I was asking. I'm kidding. Yeah, but no, that movie's great, man. I fucking love it. And it does have a good ending, man.
Oh yeah, it does. Yeah. And I applauded that ending.
And yeah. I watched The Lair of the White Worm.
Yes.
Oh, I almost mentioned that earlier when we were talking about Return of the Living Dead 3. For some reason I always had that as a piece with Lair of the White Worm, and I think it just had to do with
It's the
video store I went to.
Yeah, and also
they're
both released by Vestron Video. So
that was a weird movie.
Lair of the White Worm. That one had a cover also sort of like Return of the Living Dead. Am I wrong?
Well, it has a snake woman on the cover.
Yeah. It has like a sexy snake woman on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly.
No, Lair of the White Worm is a good one. And Ken Russell, right?
Yeah. Yes. My second Ken Russell movie this month. I also watched Gothic earlier this month.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're on like a Vestron kick there.
Yes.
I was watching all sorts of weird shit. That's just how my list works. All stuff I haven't seen before.
That's indeed great. Well, good for you.
Yes, indeed. It is. And,
but
all right, I'm just gonna keep talking unless someone hangs up. I was about to go.
I was gonna say
Gabriel Byrne in Gothic.
Yeah,
and I was gonna ask questions about Gabriel Byrne or something.
Yeah, we can talk about Gabriel Byrne after this podcast. But I will say thank you to all of our listeners for listening to this episode of the show. I'll let everyone check out Slumber Party Sleepover once it hits YouTube over at the Splat House.
We should say it's a Splat House Slumber Party Sleepover. I know I haven't been saying it that way, but
the Splat House, Splat House Slumber Party Sleepover. There we go.
Yeah, hell yeah.
But thank you everyone for listening, and have a happy Halloween and stay safe, and we'll see you all later. See you, everybody. Bye.
Happy Halloween, everyone. I'm Super Marcy.
Come on, boys and girls. Come a little closer. I'm the Reanimator. Come on, reanimate your feet.
Super Network is proudly sponsored by Surfshark VPN.
Why would you have a VPN in this day and age? Well, a lot of people are quite concerned about tracking and their online privacy, and using a VPN ensures that you are safe and secure online. Surfshark VPN provides a lot of extra added layers of security, as well as ad blocker and a kill switch if your information is ever compromised.
A great bonus feature with having Surfshark is something is not available on your streaming service in your country. You just pop on that Surfshark VPN and you can probably find so much more streaming in different countries. If you want to find something like Masters of Horror, it is available on Tubi. So just select the correct country and you'll be able to watch such a great and fantastic show.
Surfshark VPN is one of the most reliable and cheapest of the VPNs out there, with up to 81% off offer when you subscribe for 24 months. Please use the link surfshark.deals/supernetwork to take advantage of this amazing deal.
You can also find the link in the show notes.
Thank you, Surfshark. Surfy shark doo 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 doo. Surfy shark doo 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 doo.
And now back to the show.